Good evening and welcome to Amandla. And guess what? It is that time of year again where we are going to be repeating the station's phone number over and over again because it's funding drive at CKUT. And we're thrilled. We got out the gate really, really quickly. We put out an appeal to supporters whose emails we had yesterday. And within the span of the day, we raised $1,230.
Wow, fantastic.
Absolutely overjoyed.
Thank you, folks out there. At least now we know people are listening.
Yeah. So, anyway, we'll be thanking them by name later on in the show. But what you need to know right now, if you have not already donated, is to give us a call 514-448-4013.
Or if you can.
Between now and Sunday. Go ahead, Doug.
Well, if you can't phone, go online. It's really easy. CKUT, it's one of the easiest donation features I've seen. CKUT.ca/donate. And you'll see not only the form to fill out for the donations and what each donation will get you in terms of the prizes that are there, but also you'll see pictures of those prizes.
Yep. And I was just actually on that website, and CKUT has already raised attained 57% of its funding goal. So we're past the halfway mark. Amandla's way past its goal. Its goal this year was $600. We decided to go easy on our listeners. What with COVID and people losing jobs and just all the anxiety around it, we decided to cut our funding objective in half this year. And we ended up more than doubling it in one day. So we are so overjoyed. And but nonetheless, there's still a ways to go. You know, we've surpassed our goal, but you know what? Why not triple it this year? This would be great. So CKUT still has another 43% of fundraising to go. So it'd be just a fantastic thing if Amandla could do its part in getting the station there. So we'll be talking about that all through the show. But unlike previous funding shows, we're also going to do some regular programming because we're not all gathered in the studio. So there isn't that party atmosphere that we usually have.
That's right.
But stay tuned because we will be talking to you about why it's so important to fund CKUT. It has various needs, and Doug will be explaining some of that as the show progresses.
Sure. But in the meantime, on tap here on the show, I've got an interview with, 1 year ago, I spoke with Elizabeth Hill of the Canadian Network for Cuba. And she brought us up to date on the international response and the local and at-home response of Cuba to the COVID crisis. Cuba, as you all know, is a tremendous role model for Africa. And many, many African peoples look to Cuba for what could be if we ever got it together. And so I did a follow-up with her this year, and we're going to talk to her. And of course, we'll be bringing you up to date on, we were at the anti-Asian racism rally.
Anti-Asian.
My goodness gracious.
We were at the demonstration on the weekend against the terrible racist attacks that Asian Canadians are being subjected to, always have been, but there is a huge uptick in it since COVID. And so we were at that demonstration. We're going to talk a little bit about that.
Well, we were at that rally for to protest racism against the Asian community. And we met up with some friends, comrades from the Solidarité Haïti Québec, and they are organizing a major protest on March 29th, next Monday, as part of the Journée Internationale de Solidarité avec le Peuple Haïtien, International Day of Solidarity with the Haitian People, and we'll give you all the details of that before the end of the show. So stay tuned to Amandla.
አየሁ አትርቁ መሬቱን ስዳሳ ያረማመዶጓ አለው ግርማ ሞገስ ቀና ብላ የሺ በሚያፈዝ ባይኖቿ ይቆጨኝ ነበር አትሆነና
Amandla here at CKUT 90.3 on your dial. Amandla's a weekly bilingual news show about briefings and analysis from the continent of Africa. We're doing fundraising this year for CKUT. Those people keep us going, and we really, really appreciate their efforts. It's been a particularly difficult year and a bit. They missed the fundraising last year, so it's doubly difficult because they've been fiscally challenged as well as physically challenged with the disease. And so put out an appeal, as Gwen said earlier, by mail to our dear friends and comrades who are listeners and really old friends, many of them, for some support. And holy smokes, did they step up to the plate, man. It was wonderful to hear from them. Gwen, you have the list. Who all?
Yes, it's thank you time, and I want to remind our listeners we're not broadcasting live. So if or when you are calling in your donations as you listen to the show, we won't be able to thank you right away as we've been able to do in times past. We will thank you next week. So the folks I'm thanking now are the ones who donated yesterday, and we received their names. So big, big thank yous to the following people: Prakash, Natasha, Karen, Brisna and Jerry, Sama, Feroz, Guy, Rhonda, and Abby. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And I do want to point out that in that list are, you know, a couple of people who were former contributors to the show. So there's just such a loyalty to Amandla that I just love. And I don't doubt that as the fundraiser continues on, we'll be hearing from some of our other former contributors. But anyway, thank you all. That's for a total of $1,230 raised yesterday for CKUT. We are so thrilled. Please think about making a donation. The number, if you want to call it in, is 514-448-4013. Or as Doug said, really easy to do it online, ckut.ca/donate.
Bora san kaluta ni fila kono kamenyanina anga mo kika sa dungudu ko kele munte ban odi da bora antansi kanda minesa kanga dugutu ka firu polosa uko kubi normine kubi sud mine lese kuchefe kubani mine Bora uyu kalikute kitali singi auma anga dukupeka chitungudu surukudu nanka katihinana anga mahubika murutisa kuteka firijelasa uko kubamba umine kubamba umine kilise kuchepe kubanda amine
Welcome back to Amandla here on CKUT 90.3 FM, CKUT.ca. So here we are in the middle of funding drive for CKUT. It's going well, but there's still a ways to go. CKUT has raised 57% of what it needs. So we have until Sunday to make up the difference. And, Doug, it's not always clear to people, what does it cost to run a radio station? Where's this money going?
Well, community radio depends, of course, on the very front lines, very much on volunteers. And those are the likes of us and so on who do the broadcasting and contribute to the station in many other ways as well. But there still takes money and it still takes coordination and time. So first and foremost are the absolutely stellar staff that help us out, the 6 full-time and 2 part-time staff.
All of them overworked and underpaid, I might add.
Very much underpaid and it's and stressed. It's always under pressure. You know, everything is go, 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 and crisis. So it's not an easy job, and we do appreciate their support in so many ways. And of course, you're in a building. You got to pay the rent. You got to pay the electricity. You got to pay all the stuff that goes with that. That famous
antenna,
internet.
Rent the antenna, very expensive.
Well, that broadcast tower and transmitter is a huge price, of course, and the little community radio station doesn't own its own, so they have to go through others for that kind of support. There's equipment, and like anything, equipment wears out. It's amazing how you think a microphone just sitting there can't go wrong, but it does, and they do, and we've seen it, and we've had to deal with that, and we're really glad, again, that those technical people are there to pull it all together. You've got the turntables, postages, needles for the turntables, office supplies, the regular stuff that it takes to run any enterprise. So it costs money. And of course, we're not talking a big luxurious building here, nor are we talking well-paid, overpaid, fat staff. No, there were hardworking folks trying to make a thing happen, and very committed believers in the cause of community radio. So we really do appreciate everything that it takes to put this out, because it has kept Amandla on the air for over 30 years now, and we're very, very happy for that. I'm not sure we're going to get a longevity award or not, but there we are.
So as a reminder for those of you who would like to make a donation, and there is no donation that is too small, so please, if there's any change dangling around the house, think about donating it to CKUT. You can do so by phone at 514-448-4013 or online at ckut.ca/donate.
So I'm here this evening with the co-chair of Canadian Network on Cuba, Elizabeth Hill, who's based in Toronto. We interviewed her last year about the Cuban response to the COVID crisis. That would have been about a month and a half in, maybe late April, early May. And it was very impressive how Europe was struggling so much, and Cuba was even sending volunteers to help the Italian hospitals and Portuguese hospitals. So we thought after a 1 year hiatus, we should catch up with Elizabeth. How are you today?
I'm doing very well. We have good weather in Toronto, and you have to smile when the sun's out.
Oh, in Canada for sure. What's changed, or how are things doing? How has Cuba fared in this past year faced with this pandemic?
It's been a very difficult year for Cubans, and not only because of the pandemic, but also the blockade. It's like two pandemics, they said. Trump, when he was president, tightened very extensively the blockade against Cuba. One of the things he did is cut the remittances of Cubans living in the U.S. to Cuba. But not only that, it's extraterritorial. It affected Canadians who wanted to send funds to their friends. And when you've got an blockade, an economic blockade, at the same time as a pandemic that has reduced the tourism to zero, it's very hard on the economy. So the Cuban people have been suffering long lineups, shortages. They just recently made a long overdue change of the currency, getting rid of the CUCs, as tourists knew it. Mm-hmm. So they're combining it to have one currency. And there's an adjustment. In the long run, it'll be much better, but it's a very difficult period of switching over. And it's complex, so I can't go into the details of that. But at the same time, a year ago, if we remember, we were just beginning. I mean, sports were canceled, sports games. Canadians were starting to see deaths of loved ones, especially in the long-term care. And closing of businesses, working at home, staying at home. A great fear for the future. I mean, we remember people stocking up on supplies.
Oh my gosh.
Long ago, remember that?
I do. The shelves were empty of toilet paper.
Exactly. Very, very difficult time. Not the time to stick to your diet. But for me, the beacon of hope at that time, the thing that made me feel good was seeing what Cuba was doing. Because here, this little country was combating through a multi-sectorial comprehensive national program that included regular health visits, knocking on the door, sending medical students, checking on people's health, their temperature. Anyone who was in, you know, a health difficult situation would be hospitalized and looked after. And what were we doing? We were sending people home if they had COVID to recover at home, or the hospitals were full and overflowing. So this was quite a different thing. But I remember very vividly, do you remember the cruise ships around the world were going home?
Oh, yes, and they couldn't, no country would accept them anywhere.
Yeah, this one was stranded at sea because of confirmed cases of COVID. No one will take them, including the U.S., but Cuba did. It allowed the ship to land, took the passengers off, looked after them, arranged for them to get home. The British people will never forget that. There's a lot of information in the mainstream media that we see in our paper and radio and television about the development of anti-COVID vaccines. We kept seeing updates and, you know, going to trials and all these things. But Cuba, who recently is working on 5 different vaccines, we don't hear about that except on the internet. 2 of their vaccines are already in stage 3 clinical trials, including internationally. And there's one being a vaccine booster. They've started to receive some international coverage, but not much. And, you know, when you think of it, Cuba's the only country in Latin America working to develop a vaccine against coronavirus. It was building on the successes that it developed in the past. You may remember Cubans were in countries in Africa fighting Ebola, and it has bioscience centers in Havana that are developing various vaccines so that they, and this was part of the innovation of Fidel Castro, to be self-reliant on these important things. Health is a human right. You compare that to Canada. We had the Connaught Laboratories here in Toronto, where some of your listeners may remember this name because that's where the
insulin was
developed and made free and available without money patents for the discoverers. Well, this laboratories were sold off years ago under the Mulroney government. You sell off something that can develop important medical advances for people, it's unheard of. And as well, the Canadian government stopped making medical protection equipment and buys it from abroad.
Well, it was embarrassing at the beginning, totally embarrassing. A rich nation like ours,
yes,
couldn't even get gloves and masks.
Exactly. I remember donating some cotton sheets that I had to somebody who was making masks for children. So, I mean, I don't know how far past we're that, but a year ago, it was quite shocking. So now Canada's dependent on ordering from other countries, whereas Cuba, which has had a blockade for 60 years, that has forced it to develop because it's trying to meet the needs of its people. And so it had to develop these vaccines and other things, but medical treatment also. And it's been recognized around the world. Cuba started producing its own ventilators because it couldn't get them. Ships delivering equipment to Cuba were stopped because of the US blockade.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so I just find Cuba to be quite inspiring what they're doing. At the same time, they're doing it with great difficulty. They did open up the tourism a bit in the fall, but that brought in more cases of COVID. They've had very few cases, particularly compared to other countries. I think population of Cuba is around 11 million and they've had under 400 people have died. And that's because of the help that they've given and the preventative measures. But when the tourism opened up slightly and very carefully, the cases, especially around New Year's, started to grow. So they had to clamp down again. And I understand, I'm not sure if it's still there, but Havana had a 9 o'clock curfew. Anything to prevent the spread of the COVID.
It was, I understand the when it did come as a result of the resumption of tourism, the clampdown very quickly brought it back to stability so that the hospitals were not overwhelmed and that they could deal with it. And the numbers are still remarkably low compared to the United States, its neighbor, that's causing the blockade.
Yes, and I think that's due to a very different approach to the restrictions that were put to save people, rather than, as we heard in the news almost daily, cases in the United States of large gatherings of people, especially election rallies, and not the same restrictions or attention paid to the health.
Well, and Cuba has gone to such great lengths to become self-sufficient with health resources and personnel and expertise and everything that goes with it, to the point that they now are a net exporter of medical everything. Interestingly enough, the United States has closed down and isn't helping anybody else around the world, despite all their claims, and Canada for that matter, with the Global Fund. So it's been an interesting year that way.
I think that word self-sufficient, it brings to mind something. You can be self-sufficient, but we're to a point, but we're all interconnected. And Cuba was forced to develop some of its measures. But at the same time, Cuba was a country that was reaching out to the world to cooperate. This is a pandemic. This is the time to work together, not to compete to be the first one to find a vaccine so you can make money. This is the time to share our resources and our knowledge. And Cuba reached out that way, but it was not heard. I think even the UN and the World Health Organization has called for that. It's not the time for sanctions. It's not the time for, well, no time is for sanctions, but especially in a pandemic. And the US and some of the major countries did not adhere to that. And so what we're finding, I just saw an article yesterday, it's very shocking, about the pharmaceutical companies. We know the names that have produced the vaccines. These companies, some of them received money, millions of dollars from governments to develop the vaccine. They were racing against each other. But when it has been developed and approved, they are charging huge amounts for the same countries that gave the money to buy the vaccine. And most of the vaccines are being bought by the overdeveloped countries. And 70 countries around the world, the low-income countries, don't have the vaccine. A very small part of their populations are able to get it.
Oh, yes. We've covered what we've called the effect we've called the COVID apartheid. The polite media likes to call it COVID nationalism, but it's very clear that the rich countries, and predominantly northern white countries, are looking after themselves and to heck with the rest of the world.
Yes, it's quite a monopoly and a blackmail. Only I think four of the main pharmaceutical firms have 80% of the vaccines. It says what kind of a world we're living in, where this can happen, and then you have Cuba, where not only were they fighting the virus in their own country and saving lives, but they were sending international brigades around the world. There was a lot of news about the Cuban brigade in Italy, but the Cubans have gone to 40 countries.
There's 40, holy smokes.
40 different countries, 57, these are the figures, 57 brigades, because some countries have more than one brigade. And there's actually news yesterday that the 57th brigade left Cuba for Qatar. And, over 4,000 personnel. This is a poor country that is sending these resources abroad to assist, especially the poorer countries who don't have the access and don't have the support. It's not the first time they've done it. They've done this, they're well known over the years for earthquakes and Ebola and different needs when the call came. The brigade is called the Henry Reed Brigade after an American. And it over the years has become quite well known. Around the world, there's been a big call for the brigade to be given the Nobel Peace Prize. It's actually been nominated, and we'll see in the fall. Very deserving for what it's done. Just totally unselfish assistance. And it's not easy. I mean, if you can imagine what it's like for Cuban medical, they're not all doctors, there are various medical support, to leave their family and go into a situation that's unknown, difficult, very difficult to work, and to do that because of the dedication.
It's astounding. It's absolutely astounding. Last year, the Canadian Network on Cuba was organizing a fundraising campaign. How are things going?
It's actually very well. There are three things we've been doing since the pandemic. The organization, one of them is we have virtual pickets on the 17th of every month. It's a significant date. And these are done, it's a webinar, with participants from across Canada, guest speakers who have current information, but also from around the world. There are many other countries where participants have come in and been part of it or been guest speakers. So it's really growing. And it's very important to have, it's a virtual picket because there were physical ones in front of the US embassies and consulates. And it's become quite an international thing. There's also a car cavalcade that started in Florida. And this Saturday, I think Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, Winnipeg, Calgary, Ottawa, there will be car cavalcades with signs driving around against the US blockade. So there's pressure, but we're also pressuring the Canadian government as much as we can to have a policy of non-interference and respect. There was a statement, I was just trying to find the wording of it, that the Canadian Network on Cuba issued. And it basically referred to a meeting that took place on February 26th, and it was between the Global Affairs of Canada and the Foreign Minister, Mark Garneau, and U.S. Secretary of State, Anthony Blinken. So our statement said that the Trudeau government's commitment to address human rights and needed reforms in Cuba is not only a slander against Cuba, but an intolerable interference in the sovereign affairs of Cuba and a violation of its right to self-determination. Global Affairs Canada is deliberately parroting the disinformation of the United States Department about Cuba. Nowhere in the communique is there mention of the real violator of human rights in Cuba, the ongoing US economic war and campaign of subversion against the heroic island nation. So we stated that Canadians need to tell their representatives, we want relations based on equality, respect for sovereignty, and the right to self-determination, abandoning and renouncing colonialist and imperialist mindsets. So that's very important, that political aspect. And there's a third part that the CNC is working on, as you mentioned, the medical supplies. We've already had two campaigns, one to help the Henry Reed Brigade in its international work, one to provide baseball bats that were very much needed for their teams for the competitions coming up. But right now the campaign is for medical supplies, and we've raised $58,000 across Canada, no tax receipts. These are donations from individuals and organizations. And what we are embarking on is to send a container of needles. These are the needles that all over are being used to inject the vaccines. And we're able to get almost 2 million needles, and they will be sent to Cuba to assist them in their campaign of inoculating every Cuban against COVID. So that's been very successful. It's still going on. We need a bit more to meet the costs of the full shipment of the needles, but I'm pretty confident that the donations are still coming in that we can meet that. So that's a big contribution from Canadians to assist Cuba in its work.
And how can they contribute? How can our listeners get involved?
go to this, I'll make it short. They go to the CNC website. It's www.CanadianNetworkOnCuba.ca. There's two N's, Canadian and network. You end up with a double N there.
So it's one word. It's written as one word in the web address.
And there is information there for e-transfers or checks or donations that can be sent. And this will be a big help when the vaccines are approved and start to be injected in every Cuban. It's expected they should be final in the next couple of months during their third trials internationally and in Cuba.
Cuba is still a country that many African countries could afford to emulate, that is a model for self-reliant development and taking charge of your own affairs. We're always very interested in how Cuba has maintained such international solidarity on principle with all the world, but Africa in particular.
I think one of the most important things that Canada could do that would benefit Canada is to explore collaboration with Cuba on the testing of the vaccines and the possibility of a joint venture to produce them in Canada. This would benefit both our countries. When you think of an opportunity that was missed at the beginning of the pandemic, when Manitoba's First Nations, who had sent a delegation to Cuba the year before and were very impressed with the medical situation there, asked for assistance to have Cuban medical personnel to help them fight COVID in their communities. Very vulnerable population with very sparse medical supports and doctors asked that, and the Canadian government refused it. No reasons given. Why would they not send someone in to assist a community in great need that would help it? So the importance of collaboration around the world, but particularly for Canada, it can only help us. And that's what we would like to see. And that's what we're pressing for.
I thank you, Elizabeth Hill, very, very much, co-chairperson of the Canadian Network on Cuba. This has been very informative and very helpful. Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
If Canada's role with Cuba has been less than stellar, as Elizabeth Hill pointed out in her presentation about the Canadian relationships with Cuba, and then with Haiti, Canada has gone way beyond not helping, but interfering and maintaining the dictatorship and frustrating the wishes and hopes of the Haitian people for justice and freedom and democracy and equality. Nowhere is it more clearly laid out than in the film Haiti Betrayed that is recently out. It's an excellent film that goes through events since the earthquake and how Canada has really interfered and a very imperial level and very imperialist level to keep Haiti impoverished and subservient to the wishes of Western capitalism. So go to Haiti Betrayed Film, haitibetrayedfilm.com. It's all one word. And then on Monday, 29th March at 11 o'clock, the Coalition Haïtien au Canada contre la dictature en Haïti, the Haitian Coalition in Canada against the dictatorship in Haiti, is having a rally for 2 hours out front of the Haitian consulate on 300 Rue Léo Périssot. Léo Périssot is the little street right out between Jean Mance and Park, beside Pine Avenue, and that's where the Haitian consulate is, and the rally is going to protest the fact that there's a dictatorship in Haiti and that it should be changed. So abat la dictature en Haiti, hashtag abat dictature en Haiti. So please get out and support the struggle of the Haitian people. It is a very important cause.
Yeah. You are listening to the ETC Group podcast. Jack and the Cloud Giant. There was once a young farmer called Jack, who helped his mother farm a small area of land. Like many small-scale farmers, they were facing hard times, and eventually, Jack's mother suggested, reluctantly, that he should take their prize cow to market and use the proceeds to buy new seeds and animals. Jack set off full of good intentions and sold the cow for a good price at the market. Unfortunately, however, he was a gullible young man, and he was soon accosted by a corporate agribusiness salesman who dazzled him with promises of precision agriculture and digital farming. The salesman explained that if Jack shared real-time information about his farm with his company, Jack and his mother would get all sorts of useful farming advice from the company's artificial intelligence agents. The salesman convinced Jack to spend all his money on a subscription to the company's magical digital farming platform app. When Jack got home and excitedly showed his mother the new app on his iPad, she was livid. "Magical apps?